Yeah, you know, that last line right there was fascinating because that really is a great punctuation mark on our whole series. You know, we want to be the one to light the way, you know, when it comes to our neighborhoods, when it comes to the people that we live around, so that we can bring you home. We can help our neighborhoods actually see who Jesus really is. And this is at the core of what we've been talking about through this whole series of how God has actually placed us in our neighborhoods so that we can just walk alongside our neighbors. So that we can actually, and to do that, we actually have to know them, right? And you know, not just live driveway to driveway or side by side, but where we actually have relationship with them and we know them. And so we've been digging into this question, you know, what would it look like? And was Jesus really serious when he said, you know, love your neighbor as yourself? And if he was, then what kind of shifts do I need to make in the way that I interact in my neighborhoods? And we've given you a tool during this. We gave you this little block map, and you've got this once again today in your weekly. And if this is the first time you're here during the series, I'll walk you through how to use this in a moment. But we've just been saying, you know, what if I learned and retained the names? What if I put the names of my neighbors who live around me on this sheet, hung this on, you know, like my refrigerator, and I just learned their names? In fact, how many of us over the last 3 weeks have taken some step to take a step toward knowing our neighbors or talking to our neighbors? Out of curiosity, have you either met a neighbor, you filled a name in on here that you didn't know, maybe you haven't had dinner with your neighbors? That's awesome. And it's still not too late. I mean, this is the last week of the series, but you can do this all summer long, all right? You don't have to like end when the series ends. And if you've not filled this out, here's how you do it. This little block in the middle is your house. Think of it as your house. You can put your name there, Kurt and Julie. That's what we'd put there. And then just think of this as your neighborhood. Just go around your, you know, where you live, and who are the neighbors based on the proximity to your house? Who are the 8 closest neighbors to your front door? And I know, you know, if you live in like a condo or you live on a 5-acre parcel, you know, you're like, my neighborhood doesn't look like this, Kurt. I get that, all right? Just think about where would they fall? And then, you know, post this where anybody that you don't know, you can say, okay, I'm going to learn their name. It's somebody that I've lived next to for 5 years and I can't recall their name right now. I'm going to go up to them when I see them this week and say, hey, my name's Kurt. It's the craziest thing that we've lived here for 5 years and I can't remember your name. And then you learn their name. Then you run home and write it on here so that you know their name, all right? And that way, because see, here's the thing. You can't love your neighbor if you don't know their name. It's nearly impossible to do. And what this does is this takes us from being a stranger with our neighbors to becoming an acquaintance with our neighbors. And the tool is this right here, this block map. Now, in week number 2, we looked at how one of the major blocks or major barriers in getting connected with our neighbors is time. And so we looked at the time factor and how we have to prioritize our time. And, you know, we looked at our life like a jar and said, you know, you have to put the big rocks in first, the main things. And if Jesus says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself, and he says, if you're going to do anything, do this, then we have to ask the question, how do we make sure that gets into the jar? And so one of the things we looked at is how our priorities determine our capacity. What we say I want to be a part of actually determines the capacity in our lives. And then last week, we looked at the fear factor, how, you know, this whole idea of moving from an acquaintance in my neighborhood, where I now know their name, to actually being in relationship with them, there's a lot of fear, as Mike just kind of showed in that scene from Last Man Standing. Because some of you are like, Kurt, if you would just spend a half hour on my patio with my neighbors, you'd see how bad an idea this series is. You would see this is a really, really bad idea. And so the tool, though, for moving from being an acquaintance to becoming in relationship with your neighbors, we said last week, is throwing a party, right? We saw Jesus do this all the time. He either threw or went to parties to connect with people. And so last weekend, we actually kind of helped, you know, prime the pump on this. We gave out some block party kits. And we had about 9 of these go out the door. We've got 15 more today. And we hope every single one of these go out the door. And they've got hamburgers and hot dogs and buns and condiments, everything you need to have a starter kit for a block party. And I know you can probably buy these like yourself, but the goal is that, like, if you take one, you're like, okay, I'm going to commit to doing this. And in fact, one family sent me an email this week, and here's what they said. They said, this series has taken a little bit of a different spin for us since we've always known our neighbors, even with all the turnover our block has had. She went on to say, we do, though, have 3 new families at the end of our street that moved in within the past month or so. We didn't have any of their contact information, which meant we literally went, my husband and I, knocking on doors, saying, dinner's on us, grab your lawn chair, because impromptu is always best. Neighbors, we're meeting neighbors in our driveway for the very first time. As we were cleaning up towards the end of the night, one of the new neighbors, who was very recently divorced, said to me, "I can't tell you how much I needed this. I met my ex-husband's new girlfriend today over lunch, and this time in your driveway has been the only time all afternoon I haven't thought about that lunch. So thank you." So you just never know the impact that one simple gesture, as simple as hosting a party, can actually have in your neighborhood. Let me pray for us before we go any further. Heavenly Father, we just thank you for this time here, this ability to slow down and just listen to you and even change. And God, I just pray that you would help us to see today how you have placed this specifically around the people that we live around. And God, you just kind of pierce our hearts for our neighborhoods today. God, maybe we haven't even thought a second thing other than trying to learn the names of our neighbors, but God, I just pray today that you would show us exactly what our next step is and how we can be more about loving not only you, God, but loving our neighbors as ourselves. So God, we're just going to work toward that end today. We thank you for your love. God, I think the greatest thing anybody ever told me in my life is about you and your grace and your love, and it's had a major, major difference in my life. So I just pray that you would help us to see the power of that today. I pray these things according to your name and identity, Jesus. Amen. Well, today, I want us to kind of dive into this whole idea of the motive behind why we love our neighbors. All right, I want to be really clear that, you know, that when it comes to this whole art of neighboring, this is not like some evangelism strategy, right? This isn't like, let me just learn to know my neighbor's name so I can kind of develop some kind of pseudo relationship with them so I can eventually talk to them about Jesus, because that's the goal, right? Well, I mean, that eventually, that might be our hope, is that we have the chance to do that. But if sharing about Jesus or just seeing this as an evangelism strategy is our only thing, listen, you're going to be a really lousy neighbor, all right? I'm just telling you. It's not going to work. However, if you do neighboring the right way that Jesus talks about, where you just love the people around you, then people around you who don't know God are naturally going to be drawn to him. It's just amazing how this works. In fact, in the book To Transform a City, the authors, they talk about two words, the word ulterior and the word ultimate, to describe the common motives that we have when we're building any kind of relationship. And they actually talk about how the word ulterior means when something is kept concealed, right? I mean, an ulterior motive is usually manipulative. An ulterior motive is usually like, well, I'm telling you one thing, but I really have this underlying intention that I'm not really telling you that's here, but that's my ultimate goal. And then they go on to talk about the word ultimate motive, which ultimate is the furthest point on a journey, which means it's kind of the eventual point that we long to get to at some point. So if, like, you know, take a kid who's you know, maybe growing up and eventually wants to go to college and become a doctor. That's kind of his ultimate, you know, goal. Or take, you know, a young kid who's on the driveway practicing basketball and he wants to play in the NBA one day. I mean, that's his ultimate goal. And so an ulterior motive is, when it comes to good neighboring, should never be to just share Jesus, to share the gospel. And yet, the ultimate motive should be to at some point be able to share about what Jesus means to us. And so it's crazy how we have to be really clear about the difference between ultimate and ulterior. In fact, Albert Einstein, he kind of contributes to this conversation. He said this. He says, if you can't see it, you can't do it, right? I mean, think about that. That's like a really profound statement, right? You're like, I could have thought of that, but you didn't. It took somebody like Albert Einstein. If you can't see it, you can't do it. See, the reason people can't do the life of Jesus, so many people can't do it, is because they've never seen it authentically lived out. You know, the reason that so many people don't have the hope that they could have in the midst of difficult things is they've never seen somebody have a hope in the midst of difficult things. I mean, the reason that so many people can't do non-judgmental living is they've really never observed somebody, you know, live in a non-judgmental way. I mean, the reason that the many people around us can't do anything yet but buy into the American dream is because they've never been around somebody who is beyond the American dream, and they have a kingdom, eternal dream that's beyond, you know, or transcends the American dream. In fact, the Apostle Paul, he contributes to this as well. In fact, here's what he says, or I'm sorry, the Apostle Peter in Peter chapter 1 Peter chapter 3. He says, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason you have for the hope that you have. Which implies that there's something in the way that you're living. It implies there's something in the way that you're loving on people around you. If somebody's going to come and ask you, why in the world do you respond this way? Why in the world do you act this way when certain things happen? Why in the world is this the way you handle certain things that come on you? But he says, but do this with gentleness and respect. And what he's saying right here is that anything that you know, has affected my life in a good way usually naturally just comes out of my life. Anything that's had like a profound influence on my life naturally comes out of my life. Something that's really had an impact in our life over the last week is a week ago Friday, we had into our house for 4 hours the Indiana Dog Whisperer. Anybody heard of the Indiana Dog Whisperer? He is amazing, all right? Now, the reason we had to have the Indiana Dog Whisperer in is because we've got a dog named Minnie who's not been so amazing lately, all right? She's been struggling a bit with, you know, things like territorialism, you know, with people in our neighborhood as well as with our own kids. I mean, she'll kind of growl at them at time. We've learned this is like a manipulative behavior of hers. She loves to counter surf, just swipe things off the counter, you know, like food. You know, gets in the trash. Just, you know, likes to sit on the couch when we're not home, even though she knows she's not supposed to be there. So, you know, we kind of contacted the Indian Dog Whisperer, which we'd heard of from a friend. And you know, and it took us like 4 months to plan this because you have to have your whole family there for 4 hours all at the same time. And so the night before, I get a call from his assistant, and my wife, I get off the phone, and she's basically confirming the call, and my wife is like, "Why? Who was that? Who are you talking to?" I'm like, "Well, why do you ask?" She's like, "Well, you talk like you were talking to like a real elderly person. Like you're like, oh, okay." And I'm like, "I don't know why I talk that way, but I think it's because the way the lady spoke to me." She's like, "We're coming tomorrow." And I'm like, "Well, we're ready." And she's like, "Prepare to be amazed." I'm like, "We're hoping to be amazed." You know what I mean? It's like she's feeding this. But I kid you not, it's amazing. My wife literally said the other night, she's like, "We have a different dog." And I mean, and you know, we've learned that, you know, how to reestablish that we're the alpha in the home. I mean, because really, let's be honest, it was more about training us, right? I mean, it's not training the dog, it's establishing that we're the alpha in our home. And I never knew that a walk, taking your dog on a walk every day, I know it's a good idea. I had no idea that it's less about exercise and more about you showing the dog as you walk in front of it, him or her, that you're in charge. That's really what a walk is about. He taught us how to treadmill our dog. I'm like, "There is no way my dog's going to be jumping on a treadmill." Look at what happened 5 minutes after he did this. I mean, isn't that amazing? All it took was a piece of cheese. She's like walking on the treadmill. Actually, don't try this at home, all right? There's actually a rhythm to how you get your dog on the treadmill, but it was amazing. And so, you know, why am I telling you? I'm like giving an advertisement for the Indiana Dog Whisperer, right? I mean, you can check it out. Go to Facebook, check it out. You know why I'm telling you this? Because anything that has affected our lives, it naturally comes out of us, right? I mean, it like leaches out of me. It's like, I want to try that. You know, I want to tell you about it because you might want to try it too. And it's one of those things that, you know, this word evangelist that we hear in the Bible, you know, we're all an evangelist for something. All right, we always think of evangelists with connected to spirituality or God. Well, an evangelist is anything that you're championing. And we're all representing something, right? I mean, at least I hope you're representing something, or you're probably dead, right? I mean, when something has impacted your life, it naturally comes out of you. So a couple nights ago, we were out on the patio and our kids were playing, and one of our kids got bit by the neighbor dog, who's a puppy as well, and it kind of leached up and grabbed on him. I think it was very playful. I don't think it was vicious. But our neighbor then came over and she's like, "Hey, I heard my dog bit your son." And we're like, yeah, and we're talking about it. And I'm like, "Have you heard about the Indiana Dog Whisperer?" I mean, it's like for 15 minutes I'm telling her about it because it was so impactful in our life. Because anything that's affected me naturally comes out. Now, most people that go to churches, what naturally leaches out of them is things like judgmentalism, right? You know, this kind of like theological anility, you know, that just naturally leaches out of them. You know, things that, you know, this fuddy-duddy sourpussiness that just spreads all over the neighborhood. You're like, "Oh, nobody wants to be around them." You know, I mean, it's like, why? People are like, "Why would I want to be a part of that God or go to that church?" Or, you know, I mean, "I don't like what I'm smelling on them. Why in the world would I want that in my life?" Because, you know, see, oftentimes the beliefs are in the right place. It's just that the grace and the beauty and the love of Jesus just hasn't kind of invaded our lives to a place where it's seeping out. But I tell you what, when it does, people around you want it. In fact, I want to give you a picture of what this has looked like in our backyard over the last number of years. So help me welcome to the platform this morning three of my neighbors, Mark, Adejua, and Dave. Let's give them a hand as they come join me this morning. And We're just going to paint a little picture for you this morning as these guys come up here, because I spent a lot of time with these guys. In fact, this is my brother Mark. He's really my brother, like my brother from the same mother, all right? These other two guys are brothers from another mother, different mothers, but, you know, we were just hanging out last night on the patio. And so just real quick, tell us your name. Of course, I just told names, but tell us first how you ended up here at Cross Point. I mean, just so we kind of have a context for how we started here.
Yeah. I'm Mark. Mine's a little different than these guys, because being Kurt's brother, we actually have pretty much grown up in the church together, our dad being a pastor and all that. My wife Barb and I were attending my dad's church in Noblesville, where Kurt was on staff, and we were helping out with youth ministry and pretty involved with that. That was pretty much what was keeping us there at a point. And for us, we had been kind of toiling around with, you know, thinking it's time to start looking at some other churches, just dealing with some family issues that were going on at the time and some church issues and stuff like that, that we just felt, you know, it was time to maybe start exploring some things. And it was very shortly after we had that conversation that Kurt approached us and started telling us about what he was called to be doing with Julie and planting Cross Point, and asked us to be the first. I guess we were the first official Cross Point, and we just jumped on it because we knew what his vision was, because we had been seeing it in the youth ministry and what he was being drawn to, what the church should be and could be. And so for us, that was just the moment that we knew that we wanted to be a part of Cross Point in this whole venture. So.
And so, you know, we hung out at Mark and Barb's house, and so, you know, we grew up sharing a bedroom together. And so we found this house behind their house that we're like, oh, this would be a great place to live. So I'm like, well, you share a bedroom. How would you feel if we lived right behind your back door? You know, and so we became neighbors.
Luckily, we got along pretty well as kids. I mean, we had our moments, but, you know, we survived. Yeah. And so
we made it. And we still are.
It's been, oh, yeah, yeah. And so it's been a blast, though.
Yeah. How about you, Adedra?
We moved into the neighborhood next door to Mark, actually, in 2004. And my wife, Linda, who's in the back and will shoot me if I'm pointing her out. We moved in next door. We started talking to Mark. My wife, Linda, is an educator, and Mark and his wife are educators. They started a conversation. And just over time, they let us know that Kurt was moving in behind us. And we were looking for a church at that particular time. We had tried various places. Mark's house and wondering who is this guy and why are they putting food back and forth. And a few months after that, they told us the church was starting, and Mark told us, since we were a family of five, that we would get $50 each if we would become one of the first to join the church. But that's how we sort of got connected in the neighborhood.
Yeah. I'm Dave. We built our house in 03. We were the first ones in the what we call the hood. And and then Mark and Barb moved in, and Adedra and Kurt and everything. At that time, when they started Cross Point in 07, we were going to a small church. It was 45 minutes away, and we loved it, but we wanted to be more involved. I mean, we knew that we were called to be more involved, but it was just so far away, and with work and everything, it was just like a struggle. So we eventually gave in to... All of the chaos and the beauty that was going on in our backyard, because they would get together and there would be life together groups, there'd be small groups, and I'm like, oh, I want to be involved, I want to go out there, but if they only knew I sold wine and liquor for a living,
we might think, wow, come join the party. But that's right. Not generally the way people that are Christian respond,
exactly.
Right?
Most churches kind of frown on such professions, but anyway. We decided, you know what, we're gonna do this, because we know them, but we didn't really know them. And so I remember we went to Cross Point. It was at this school, and I remember we're sitting there, Angie and I are sitting there, and we're like, oh my God, they're playing Prince. Like, when does cry? What? Seriously? And so we sat there, and then the service started, and Kurt, he is this way on the back patio. I mean, it's just as easy to talk to him. The way he talks to us here is the way he is. And so...
Well, he is a little nicer now. He used to punch me if I did a little too much. He doesn't do that anymore. He just...
Yeah. And so later in the service, the band did a cover song from U2, and I'm like, oh, one of my favorite bands. I mean, are you kidding me? And then to top it off, they did a video segment that day on from I Am Second, and it had one of the Cowboys football players on there, which I'm a Cowboys fan. So I said, that's it. This is where we're going. And that was in 2009, and we've been here ever since.
Yeah, so so now, I mean, these guys are obviously connected here, but that's kind of the later down the road stuff. So I want to get into the backyard now, because really that's where relationships began. And just share a little bit about what that's looked like for you to kind of begin to see who Jesus is and what some of his intentionality for the neighborhood and living as neighbors and how, even the way his grace comes into play on all this. What does that look like for you guys, as this has formed over the last 7, really 10 years?
Well, we talked about it a little bit last night, and these two guys have already started talking. And some of the things we mentioned were when we had snow clearing. Driveways, sidewalks. And it was just a natural thing to do. I mean, I had a snowblower, he had one. I said, well, that's kind of like what this intentionality is all about. This is why, Jesus is born. I never really thought about it that way. It's just something that you do. I mean, it's a neighborly thing to do. We're talking together, and I think it's those kind of things that go on in our backyards and together with each other and with other neighbors who are not even here, on a regular basis.
Yeah, I mean, the whole snowblowing thing, like, he would do, like, his house and the 2 or 3 houses that way, and he'd bring it over, and I'd do mine, and the 2 or 3 houses this way, and it was just, and some of the neighbors at that time, we didn't even know, and they were like, oh, you didn't have to do that, and we're like, well, that's the way it is, that's the way we roll around here.
Yeah, and I think, one of the things that I'm always amazed with is the, as Kurt had said, I'm blood, and these guys are not, but I mean, we are truly family. And just think of the countless times where it's just we've relied on each other without asking, or even feeling like I need to ask for this, or can you help me out with this? It's
no
just
hesitation.
One of those things that we just respond. It's instinct. Last month, Adejua coming over really just on his own, knowing that the kids were home. It was one of the first times I'd let our son Luke stay home with Lexi for just a short appointment. I had to go, and sure enough, there were tornado warnings that popped up as soon as I leave. And, without even thinking, he just goes over there and grabs them. And I didn't think twice about being worried about, him taking them or anything like that. It's just that's that kind of openness that it's become, which, it's kind of contagious because, I don't know any other way of thinking about it other than it's just kind of like family just taking that responsibility with that. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And I think Crosspoint has a big part of that. It's indirectly, if that makes sense, because I think if I was going to a different church and Adejua was going, it would be the same way because of the foundation that we have. But Crosspoint fosters that. I mean, this is what we've talked about from the very, very beginning, community. So we're spoiled. I mean,
it's like pressure. Who's going to move out first, right?
And
have you guys thought about moving?
We're all moving.
Yeah, right? I mean, for us, I know Barbara and I've had multiple conversations because we're outgrowing our house, and she built the house actually. She had no intentions of staying there. It was just a starter house, and then now we have 2 kids that are growing, and we don't seem to get rid of stuff. We collect things all the time, But it comes back to what are we giving up by moving into a bigger house? We're giving up our neighbors. We're giving up what we look outside every evening now when the kids are all just running around.
12 of them.
We have no fences in our backyards. And I mean, that's a huge thing to give up. And so that really is the major factor of what keeps us there. So.
And Dave does not mind drinking a glass of wine in front of Kurt anymore. Relax.
I may join him. I mean, yeah. Well, there's something powerful that happens. And it's not just like, oh, these 4 of us, really, this is just a representation of about 8, families or so that at some point have been impacted. And some of our neighbors go to other churches. It's not about here. It's about these relationships are actually the platform for which we have the opportunity then to really live life the way Jesus asked us to, and to love our neighbor as ourself the way that he asked us to, as we've been talking in this series. Let's thank these guys for sharing with us this morning. Thank you, men. You know, one of the things Adejo will come over to me every now and then, and he'll be like, hey, I just met so-and-so for the very first time. And you know, before long, we were talking about Crosspoint. I'm like, oh, that's cool. He's always having these conversations with me. Why does he do that? How does it always end up with Crosspoint? Well, it's because whatever has affected our life naturally begins to come out. And when we talk about it in appropriate ways, you know what begins to happen? He actually grows closer to God in that process. That's what happens when we talk about things that have impacted us, specifically spiritual things. We actually grow closer to God. This is actually what the book of Philemon says. Anybody like recently read the book of Philemon out of curiosity? Itty little bitty book in the New Testament. See, here's what's cool about Philemon. If you want to go home and be like, man, I rocked a whole book of the Bible today, go read Philemon. All right, it's one chapter. All right, it really isn't one. It's just like verses because it's only one chapter. But here's what Philemon says. He says, I pray that you may be active in sharing your faith so that you have a full understanding of every good thing we have in Christ. And so what this says right here is that, you know, I will have, as I share my faith, I actually begin to have a fuller understanding of the bigness of God. That it's actually not until I begin to share, you know, these things that affected my life that I begin to, you know, that I begin to experience. It's almost like boosters my faith. And not only does it booster my faith, but it actually helps others see who Jesus really is. And let me just say right here, I want to be really clear. I'm not talking about like handing out Bible tracts, just in case you're wondering. Never hand out a Bible tract. Never do that. All right? I'm not talking like going door to door to people you don't know, like knocking on doors, you know, and just saying, oh, let me just talk to them because I feel like I need to share something that's going on in my life. I'm not talking about that at all. In fact, I was driving home with my kids like 3 days ago into the neighborhood, and I saw this young man dressed in a tie and a woman in a dress walk off one of my neighbor's porches, and I just go, oh, gosh. And my kids are like, what, Dad? And I'm like, well, you know, there's people probably out, you know, talking with Jesus, with people they don't even know. And they're like, well, that's good, right? I'm like, well, not exactly, you know. And I'm not saying it doesn't work. I'm just saying, like, when they come to my house, you know, when people ring my bell and they're like, hey, can you know, do you have a faith? And they try, you know, at some point I'm like, listen, is this working? And they look at me and they're like, is this working? I'm like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, well, is anybody inviting you in to talk about this? And they kind of look at me and I say, listen, I'm a part of a church here in Fishers, and we're just trying to like reflect God's love right here in our community. They're like, oh, you're part of a church. Where do you go to church? I'm like, well, it's over on Olio Road. And they're like, Olio? I'm like, oh, so you're not from Fishers at all, right? I mean, obviously, you'd know Olio if you live in Fishers. And basically, we just kind of go through the same routine, and I'll say to them, hey, I'm just going to ask you to, like, not ruin it for the rest of us here. I'm like, what do you mean by that? I'm like, well, you know, there's a whole bunch of us here that are just trying to reflect God into our neighbors. And this doesn't really, this actually is the stereotypical idea or concept of what most people think it is to interact with somebody who's a follower of Jesus. And you're kind of ruining it for the rest of us who live here and are just trying to have a positive influence. See, the Apostle Paul, he gives us a different picture. And we looked at this in week number one. I want to revisit it as we wrap this series up because he gives us this great perspective on how I believe God strategically places us in our neighborhoods to be salt and light. In fact, here's what he says in Acts 17. This is Paul talking at the Acropolis. He says, from one man he has made every nationality to live over the whole earth and has determined their appointed times and, get this, and the boundaries upon which they're going to live. And what he's saying right here is you've been placed in your neighborhood. God actually established the boundaries within which you're going to live. He put you there and he put the people around you. And it goes on, he says, he did this, and I love the posture that's implied right here. He says, he did this so they might seek God and perhaps they might reach out and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. You know what he's saying right here? What he's saying right here is you don't live in your neighborhood for the reason you thought you lived in your neighborhood. See, you thought you bought your house because of the subdivision or because of what school your kids are going to go to or because of the number of bedrooms or bathrooms or the curb appeal or you got a pool in the backyard, whatever it might be. But this says God actually puts you right there. You know why he put you right there? So that when people around you begin to reach for God, they'll have a handle, a.k.a. you, right next door to him to grab onto. And see, my prayer through this whole series is that this would sink in for us. Because when we begin to realize that I'm placed in my neighborhood for a reason, that God actually put me there to be a handle, not to go around and, you know, be hammering people upside the head with judgmentalism or even the story of Jesus, but just to be there when people are ready to reach out. I'll tell you what, this is a game changer. I mean, you begin to drive into your neighborhood differently. You begin to drive out of your neighborhood differently because it begins to change the way you see and interact with the people that live right around you. And it doesn't mean you're going to be like best friends with all your neighbors. Listen, some of your neighbors, they don't have time for you, all right? You may have tried to connect with them as we've tried to connect with some of ours. They don't have time, at least right now. But one of the things we know is when people go through tension, transition, or trouble, right? Trouble's like always bad. Tension and transition, sometimes it's good, sometimes those are bad. Might be getting a new job, might be adding a new baby to the home, might be a divorce. I mean, it could be any number of things that in those times, people begin to reach out to God. And see, here's the thing. Some of our neighbors are dying just to have relationship, authentic relationship with someone. And for some of us, it's the people we least expect around us. And Jesus says, I just want you to get to know them. I just want you to begin to foster a relationship with them, plan opportunities to connect with them and grow in relationship. And then he says, be prepared when asked, whenever that time comes, to share the hope that you have and why you have it. You know what's really cool is Jesus gives us like two great statements in the Bible. There's two statements that are referred to as the great statements or the great commandment, the great commission. In fact, that's the name of them. And we've been looking at the great commandment during this series where, you know, Jesus has asked the question, you know, if you're going to do one thing, Jesus, if there's one thing in all the scriptures, what would it be that we need to be about? And Jesus says, love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all of your mind, and without taking a breath. He says, and love your neighbor as yourself. He says, if you're going to go after one thing, go after this. But then we also have this other great thing that's called the Great Commission. And this happens right before Jesus leaves the earth and returns to heaven. All right, he's died on the cross. He's been resurrected. He's living for, I don't know, 40, 50, 60 days before he returns to heaven. And right before he goes back up to sit at the right hand of God, he says, therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, help baptizing them, meaning mark them with baptism so we know that they've taken a step toward God in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. And here's the thing with these two great statements of Jesus. If we just focus on living out the great commandment of loving God and loving neighbor, guess what? The Great Commission just naturally happens. It naturally happens in our backyards, in our front yards. You know, when we naturally just follow after the heart of God and say, God, I'm going to do everything possible to love the people around me that you literally placed around me, God uses our lives to help people see and come to know who this Jesus really is. And what's crazy is it also gives our neighbors a chance to see who we really are. I mean, listen, my neighbors, they see when I'm like yelling at my kids and maybe cussing at them every now and then. I don't know. They hear that when our windows are open. I mean, they see that as much as I'm trying to follow after the heart of God, that I'm not always, you know, nailing it all the time. They see that. But you know what else they see? They also see what it looks like for a person following after the heart of God, how I leverage and deal with those moments, and how the grace of God continues to wash over my life, even when life doesn't go the way we plan. Because they see all of me. They see all of us. So I think this is what Jesus was talking about when he said this. He said, here's another way to put it. He said, you're here to be light, bringing out the God colors in the world. God is not a secret to be kept. We're going public with this, as public as a city on a hill. If I make you light bearers, you don't think I'm going to hide you in a bucket, do you? I'm putting you on a light stand. Now that I've put you on the hilltop, on a light stand, shine. Keep open house. Be generous with your lives by opening up to others. Get this right here. By opening up to others, you'll prompt people to open up to God. You'll give them handles to grab onto, this generous Father in heaven. Go ahead and take out your connection card. On the back side, we give you some next steps every week. And as we kind of wrap this up, you know, the beauty of the art of neighboring is just in how simple and genuine it is. I mean, it really is. I mean, you don't have to memorize any pitches, you know, to talk about, you know, your faith or what God's done in your life. You don't have to, you know, chart out some master plan of how can I help my neighborhood experience who Jesus is. You don't have to worry about like a 30-second elevator speech. I mean, you don't need to do any of that. You know, you don't need to make your neighbors your pet project. You know what Jesus says? Just love them. He says, just simply love on them. And then love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and everything else begins to fall into place. He says, all these things begin to fall into place when we go after the things. This is why Jesus said, love me and love your neighbors. And it starts, these are some of our next steps. It starts with you know, learning and retaining their names. If you haven't filled out the block map, I encourage you to start right here. You know, just finish filling this in. All right? This is the starting point. And then once you become acquaintances with your neighbors, just look for opportunities to connect with them. You know, look to create an environment where you can just, you know, hang out, a party, you know, barbecue on the patio. I mean, these are ways that we move into relationship with our neighbors. And it's only through these vehicles and these relationships that we begin to get into some of the deeper opportunities for conversations with our neighbors. In fact, we're going to give out again this week block party kits. We gave them out last week. We got 15 block party kits that we're ready to give out today. They're going to be at the front doors. I'd love if all 15 of them go out with this service. I'd love that second service doesn't get a shot. All right? Just see if we can accomplish that this hour. All right? And I know you can buy hamburgers and hot dogs. I know you don't need somebody to buy buns and ketchup and mustard. But in this kit, you have everything needed to start a block party this week. And it's really a Trojan horse. It's really a way for us to say, hey, would you commit to having one this week? Not just marking it on your card, but what you commit to taking a box and then actually connecting with your neighbors. So those are going to be available at the front doors as you leave today. And then just be prepared. Why be prepared to share the hope that I have and why I have it whenever I'm asked, whenever I have the opportunity, because somebody says, hey, why do you live different? There's something different about the way you interact with people. Why is that? And this is where we capture the heart of what it means to be a great neighbor. And I tell you what, I mean, just imagine if every single person connected with Crosspoint would just do this for the next 2 months. If we just learned the names, connected with our neighbors, took advantage of opportunities when people ask us why we have the hope we have. I tell you what, our community would change overnight. It'd be a game changer. All right, let's stand. Let me pray for us before we get out of here today. Heavenly Father, we just thank you for these powerful two commands that you've given us. And Jesus, we want to be about things that you're about. So God, I just pray that you would help us to get a clear sense of what it means to love you more, to orient our life, our minds, our hearts, our activities around you, and God, to love our neighbors as we love ourselves. God, I pray today as we wrap this series up that this is just the beginning. I pray really, God, that as we exit here today that, man, that you would pierce our hearts for our neighbors, that you would just burden our hearts or maybe even be a face or a name coming to mind right now. We don't know what goes on inside the homes or inside the relationships of our neighbors. We know that there are people 100 feet from our front door in many cases who are dying, literally dying inside, and dying to have a relationship with someone. So God, I just pray that you would give us a heart for them. God, I pray that you'd help us to take seriously your command to not only love you, but to love our literal neighbors. And God, that you would just awaken something inside of us, God, that you would awaken a passion for our community, this passion that your heart runs after, God, because we know when our heart runs after the things that your heart runs after, God, that we're running in the right direction. So help us to run hard this week, and we pray these things according to your name and your character and your identity, Jesus.